This.
Bonnie Gani, everyone. This is Professor Amin-Ra sitting in for Rasha P. Mascani on the CNN show. We have a very special guest for you. And we're going to be discussing Black history, and he'll give you the specific title related to Carter G. Woodson view. We want to thank Brother Mashinda for chiming in. And, you know, we're just going to just have a round table discussion. The whole purpose of the program is to educate our people, educate them, organize them, mobilize them. Well, educate them, mobilize them, organize them, and then confront whatever issues we are faced with as African people. We are grateful to have this Brother Charles Alexander, who's a psychologist out of Chicago, to present an in-depth discussion about Carter G. Woodson and Black History Month. So without further delay, we're going to let him get started. And Charles, we welcome you to the CNN show. And it's a beautiful thing. How is Chicago? I saw Ms. Lightfoot not feeling too good.
She's not feeling too well. But it's all good otherwise. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, okay, then. Go ahead. It's all you.
All right, let me see if I can share my screen here.
Did you leave it for you? He said it. You need to share the screen.
Yeah, he said I could. I got it going here. You see that?
Yeah.
You can see it.
I look back at Black History Month, a view from the bridge.
A Black History Month, a view from the bridge, yes. And so what I'm going to do, I'm going to run through these slides. It's about 10 slides, I believe it is. And then, you know, we'll have a discussion. So I look back at Black History Month, a view from the bridge. Purpose. The purpose of this discussion, first and foremost, is to acknowledge Dr. Carter G. Woodson and his great works. In so doing, it is also necessary to clarify inaccuracies regarding Dr. Woodson and his work. Who was Dr. Carter G. Woodson? Carter G. Woodson was the second African-American to receive a doctorate from Harvard after W.E.B. Du Bois. Known as the father of Black history, Woodson dedicated his career to the field of African-American history and lobbied extensively to establish Black History Month as a nationwide institution. He also wrote many historical works, including the 1933 book, The Miseducation of the Negro. He died in Washington, D.C. in 1950. Early life. Carter G. Woodson was born on December 19, 1875 in New Canton, Virginia, to Anna Eliza Riddle Woodson and James Woodson. One of nine children, Woodson worked as a sharecropper and a miner to help his family. Woodson enrolled in 1895 at Huntington's all-Black Douglas High School and was frequently absent because he was off working, but he studied Virgil and Caesar on his own. Tested well and received a diploma after about a year of a two-year program in 1896 in a graduating class of two. In 1900, Carter H. Barnett, a Woodson first cousin, was fired as principal of Douglas High School because of his politics. Woodson was hired to replace Barnett as principal that summer. While principal, Woodson earned a West Virginia teaching certificate with an average score of 91. Woodson then studied briefly at Berea College in Kentucky and at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania before moving to Fayette County, West Virginia, and teaching high school in Winona. Woodson completed the two-year BL degree at Berea in 1903. After attending Berea College in Kentucky, Woodson worked for the U.S. government as an education superintendent in the Philippines. He undertook more travels before returning stateside to continue his studies, earning his bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Chicago in 1908. Woodson went on to receive a doctorate from Harvard University in 1912, becoming just the second African-American to earn a PhD from the prestigious institution after W.E.B. Du Bois. After finishing his education, Woodson dedicated himself to the field of African-American history. The story of Black History Month begins in Chicago during the summer of 1915. An alumnus of the University of Chicago with many friends in the city, Carter G. Woodson traveled from Washington, D.C. to participate in a national celebration of the 50th anniversary of emancipation sponsored by the state of Illinois. Inspired by the three-week celebration, Woodson decided to form an organization to promote the scientific study of Black life and history. On September 9th, Woodson met at the Wabash YMCA with A.L. Jackson and three others and formed the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. The Journal of Negro History first appears in 1916, and it's around 1920, or actually in 1920, in the fourth volume that Carter G. Woodson publishes an article, Negro Life and History in Our Schools. And this appears to be the first article that he writes in which he's drawing attention to the lack of information that is being presented to everybody, really, but our young people in particular, at every level of the educational process. There's no information. Well, there's very little information, and the information that is presented is very negative and condescending. And so it's 1919 is when it appears that is the first time that he's writing a critique of the educational system with regard to the coverage of the history of the Black man. As early as 1920, Woodson urged Black civic organizations to promote the achievements that researchers were uncovering. A graduate member of Omega Psi Phi, he urged his fraternity brothers to take up the work. In 1924, they responded with the creation of Negro History and Literature Week, which they renamed Negro Achievement Week. In 1925, he decided that the association had to shoulder the responsibility. Going forward, it would both create and popularize knowledge about the Black past. He sent out press release announcing Negro History Week in February 1926. And so here, again, we see that on the onset, Dr. Woodson didn't have a particular thought about how long, you know, well, he didn't have a particular thought apparently on a particular time to celebrate. So this came about, this notion of a week designated for such apparently comes about from the work done by his fraternity. And it was a success and it went over well. Rave reviews. And based on that, he decided, as it notes, that the association would be responsible going forward. So, why February? Woodson chose February for reasons of tradition and reform. It is commonly said that Woodson selected February to encompass the birthdays of two great Americans who played a prominent role in shaping Black history, namely Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, whose birthdays are the 12th and the 14th, respectively. More importantly, he chose them for reasons of tradition. Since Lincoln's assassination in 1865, the Black community, along with other Republicans, have been celebrating the fallen president's birthday. And since the late 1890s, Black communities across the country have been celebrating Douglass's. Well aware of the pre-existing celebrations, Woodson built Negro History Week around traditional days of commemorating the Black past. He was asking the public to extend their study of Black history, not to create a new tradition. Yet, Woodson was up to something more than just building on tradition. Without saying so, he aimed to reform it from the study of two great men to a great race. Rather than focusing on two men, the Black community, he believed, should focus on the countless Black men and women who contributed to the advance of human civilization. Woodson and the association scrambled to set a theme for the annual celebrations and provided study materials, pictures, lessons for teachers, plays for historical performances, and posters of important dates and people. And so, again, we've often heard it said, you know, people, uninformed people, you know, start with making statements that they gave us February, and they gave us February because it's cold and it's the shortest month, but that is not the case. Dr. Woodson chose February, and he chose February because there was already existing celebrations occurring in recognition of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, and he chose the dates from February 7th to 14th because those 7 days encompass those two birthdays. And again, as noted, it was his goal to build upon an existing celebration and to shift people from attention on just those two people to all of the collective works of Black people. In 1937, at the urging of Mary McLeod Bethune, Woodson established the Negro History Bulletin, which focused on the annual theme. Provisions with a steady flow of knowledge, high schools and progressive communities formed Negro History Clubs. As Black populations grew, mayors issued Negro History Week proclamations, and cities like Syracuse, progressive whites joined Negro History Week with National Brotherhood Week. And so two things, again, that kind of reinforce the thought that it was never in the mind of Dr. Woodson that Black History Week would be the end all. First and foremost, the Journal of Negro History is and has always been a quarterly. So there was always content that the association was producing year round, starting in 1916. And similarly, the Negro History Bulletin, it was essentially a teacher's aid. And so it was information that was being produced on a regular basis for teachers at all grade levels to be able to utilize with their students. Black History Month. Well before his death in 1950, Woodson believed that the weekly celebrations, not the study or the celebration of Black history, would eventually come to an end. In fact, Woodson never viewed Black history as a one-week affair. He pressed for schools to use Negro History Week to demonstrate what students learned all year. In the same vein, he established the Black Studies Extension Program to reach adults throughout the year. As early as 1940s, Blacks in West Virginia, the state where Woodson often spoke, began to celebrate February as Negro History Month. In Chicago, a now forgotten cultural activist, Frederick H. Hamerai, started celebrating Negro History Month in the mid-1960s. In 1976, 50 years after the first celebration, the association used its influence to institutionalize the shifts from a week to a month and from Negro history to Black history. And I believe it was Gerald Ford in 76 who formalized the Black History Month. Now, a view from the bridge. And this is a quote from Chancellor Williams, "The Destruction of Black Civilization." What then is the view from the bridge? The outlook is grim. For the Black people of the world, there is no bright tomorrow. The Blacks may continue to live in their dream world of singing, dancing, marching, praying, and hoping because of the diluted signs of what looks like victories, still trusting in the ultimate justice of the white man. But 1,000 years hence, their descendants will be substantially where the race was 1,000 years before. But white people still, masters of the world, do not have to yield. And so that opened this up for a conversation. And so the main point of the slide presentation, again, was to provide information that oftentimes that we hear people misrepresent. Again, namely that Black History Month was something that was given to us as opposed to something that is a manifestation of our own, you know, creative endeavors. Secondly, that it was done so in February, because that is the shortest and coldest month. And third, that, you know, this argument that our history is greater than a week or a month, as if it was the intention of Carter G. Woodson to somehow limit our study, none of which is the truth. And so, given the information that we have here and the fact that we are up against it now, because for much the same reason as it was necessary for Dr. Woodson and the association to come up with what has become Black History Month, we find ourselves now facing a fascist government system in which we're seeing censorship, we're seeing not just rollbacks of, you know, of our, you know, our voting rights and, you know, other aspects of our quality of life. We see in places such as Florida, and they're not the only place, where there's just concerted effort to limit instruction relative to Black history to the degree that it is believed that somehow or another that history, our history, is necessarily a negation of United States history, as opposed to within the context of United States history, we are history makers, and there have absolutely been circumstances that are documented within the context of that history that shows that there are, whether it be the government or private citizens, that there have been bad actors and bad characters who have adversely impacted the life and well-being of African Americans. And in spite of that, we've been able to grow and contribute. And so with that, again, we'd like to open it up for broader conversation about thoughts on Black History Week, Month, Carter G. Woodson, the history of the negation of Black life and culture, and the current circumstance as we take a look at the view from the bridge. You know, are we looking at this thing from a realistic point of view? Are we clear that we are still, you know, literally at war? Or are we believing that because we have, you know, a sister as vice president, we already had a Black president, and we now have our third Supreme Court justice, that those achievements mean that we have arrived?
All right, that was excellent, brother. I mean, appreciate your research, appreciate your presentation. I'm going to start with Mashenda. You have any questions, Mashenda?
No, I don't have any questions. Just appreciate the brother sharing tonight. It's just amazing that, you know, the brother that, you know, started Black Negro History Week, spinning off into, you know, the Black History Month, you know, I'm just curious, you know, and again, during those times, you know, how the seriousness of the brothers, you know, You know, something I think we've lost. I think brothers on the call tonight and a lot of the people that come on the podcast, you know, try to continue the struggle and try to make a difference, you know, in people's lives and then that in their have, you know, carry that out during their careers and things like that. But, you know, it's just interesting to me that a brother like Carter G. Woodson, you know, back in his day, born, what, like I said, 1875 or something, and to be, you know, and of course, coming out of, I guess both of his parents were slaves, and they were poor and things like that, you know, coming up, and just the tenacity and the wherewithal to, you know, to try to, make breakthroughs for Black people and to be able to create something, you know, or to, you know, initiate this movement, you know, historical movement, and then fast forwarding to right now where, you know, they talk about the critical race theory. And of course you got the guy in Florida, the Governor DeSantis. He's moving full steam ahead of removing history, the history of our people out of the schools and things like that, you know. So it's the, you know, it's very important, I think, that Carter G. Woodson be recognized. And, you know, he's just not a brother that created, you know, Negro History Week. He's got a, you know, serious history, you know, and I know his affiliation with the NAACP back then. I know these days the NAACP, they get a bad rap, you know, in a lot of circles because, you know, for different reasons. And, you know, I'm not, like I say, you know, of course, from my understanding, but I wonder what it was like back then. You know, of course, you know, I understand the inception, you know, NAACP, they talk about the different awards and things that, you know, the Jews and the blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, the brothers, you know, that were trying to uplift people, you know, it's like that's missing today. And I'm living in a society where the kids are, you know, a lot of the kids, not all of them, but we like to give praise to and be positive for the ones that are doing it. But across the board, there's a lot of problems out there, and it's a lack of identity, like Brother Hembrick talks about, Professor Ra, and yourself. And so it's just, you know, I'm just happy to be on the call, just to listen, you know, to feel my spirit, you know, to rehear some things, hear some things that, you know, I didn't know about possibly, and to continue this discussion and kind of, you know, continue that struggle and present this kind of information, you know, this African history, you know, in American, African American experience and try to, you know, let young children know this, you know. So anyway, again, I don't really have a question. I just wanted to salute you, brother, just for coming on and present, and hopefully the people that listen to this podcast in the future will gain a great understanding.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Michelle, for the commentary. Brother Hembrick, did you have any comment? Or did you hear what we was going over?
Somewhat. I appreciate you, brother, your presentation, tuning in late. I have
one question. You're breaking up, Joe.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. My company is the month that we celebrate. You know, February, you know, it's fine out here on the West Coast, but on the East Coast, you know, February, folks can't even come outside. Pretty much, you know, kind of hampered. I would like to start a nationwide push to have it moved to June, you know, along with Juneteenth. Because February, you know, back east, I mean, what can they do? They're inside trying to stay warm. It's hard to put on, you know, affairs when you're dealing with 10 feet of snow and all of that. So that was one comment I'd like to make. And the second one I'd like to make is, you know, in in my study of, you know, Black History Month, whatever you want to call it, it appears to me that we don't tie, you know, the motherland across, you know, that history to bring into the fold so folks can see a complete picture of what has happened to us and what we were and what I feel we need to get back to. You know, I know we've been kind of culture here in America, but I think the key to our success is tapping into what we once were. And so I just like to hear the brother's comment on that, on those two things.
Charles, you want to go back to that slide when you said why February, and read that again and discuss this piece. Mm-hmm.
Can you see the slide?
Yo.
Yeah, can you see the slide?
Yes, I can see part of it.
All right. And so again,
Why don't you read it, y'all?
Okay.
Because you say you only can see part of it.
Why February? Wilson chose February for reasons of tradition and reform. It is commonly said that Wilson selected February to encompass the birthdays of two great Americans who played a prominent role in shaping Black history, namely Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, whose birthdays are the 12th and the 14th, respectively. More importantly, he chose them for reasons of tradition. Since Lincoln's assassination in 1865, the Black community, along with other Republicans, had been celebrating the fallen president's birthday. And since the late 1890s, Black communities across the country have been celebrating Douglass's. Well aware of the pre-existing celebrations, Woodson built Negro History Week around traditional days of commemorating the Black past. He was asking the public to extend their study of Black history, not to create a new tradition. And so, again, it was his goal to be able to benefit from, you know, two events that were already occurring and that were already occurring, you know, the occurrence of which was pretty widespread. And so he chose February intentionally because of those two dates, the 12th and the 14th. And he chose because of the concept of a week that he gained from his work with his fraternity, or because the fraternity's event the year before, Omega Psi Phi's event the year before, he chose February 7th because those 7 days would encompass both of those dates. So that's how we get February. And the event, it occurs. It occurred then, and it occurs now, kind of regardless of the weather. Here in Chicago, it's usually cold in Chicago, January and February, and it's cold in Chicago at Christmas time, and so we do Kwanzaa in the cold, we do Black History Month in the cold, and I'm sure that's what goes on, you know, throughout the Midwest and also in the Northeast, that people are able to celebrate our history and culture kind of regardless of the weather.
And then the other part of the question was about should we go back to we must include Africa from that standpoint.
Absolutely, and it's pretty amazing if you go to the archives for the Journal of African American History, or the Journal of Negro History, that throughout that there's always been articles about, there's always been articles produced about, you know, life in Africa, governance in Africa, legal concepts in Africa, about essentially wherever we may have been through the course, through the lifetime of this journal. There's articles about Blacks in Canada. There's articles about us, you know, again, wherever, doing whatever. And so it is not limited to research on our experience here. It deals with the African on the continent and wherever you find the African in the diaspora.
Any other questions, Joe?
No, I just still comment on the first thing I presented. I realized that the reason why it separated for a serious update, I think, you know, we need to be constantly adjusting, you know, what we do. And just because, you know, it's still celebrated by a few back in the Midwest and the East Coast, how much more participation could take place if it was at a different time? That's all I'm saying. And that weather that they celebrated in back there, you know, that's not our type of weather. You know what I'm saying? That's just some food for thought. Okay. As far as, you know, Woodson, not Woodson, but Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, I think that Juneteenth is celebrated more, you know, than those who made it today. And that's what I was suggesting, to be tied around to that time period, you know, for that purpose, just to, you know, get more outside participation. We are nature, which is where we need to be, out there in that sun, not in them icicles and whatnot. But that's another person, you know, cultural nature, if you will. But anyway, it's just some food for thought. Appreciate you.
But I have a question for you, just relative to Juneteenth. I mean, there's also a critique of Juneteenth in that there were still enslaved Africans in the continental U.S. after June 19, 1865. So why do we even celebrate Juneteenth on that date if that is in fact the case? So why would that date, A, there are still people enslaved in Texas after that date and elsewhere in the states. And so given that, why would people celebrate Juneteenth other than folks in Texas?
I kind of agree with you. What's your point?
Can't hear you, Joe. You're coming in and out.
I can agree with the point that you're making about, you know, why celebrate Juneteenth. And it's, you know, but it is more so than people in Texas. But my point on the celebration is the fact that there's more people celebrating that than the original reasons why it was celebrated. Because of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass's birthday, you know. Although it is, you know, primarily associated with Texas, but I know across the nation is celebrated more so than, you know, the fact that we celebrated Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln's birthday. That was my point.
Yeah. I was just asking, you know, why would that date, which is essentially a day versus a month, given what we know about the month, why would that make that date even more? Why would that make that date more significant than the month of February? But I get it, and I mean, it just kind of is what it is. So, for example, I'm from St. Louis, and I think that I think Emancipation in St. Louis is I think it's January 11th. But nobody in St. Louis celebrates Emancipation Day on January 11th. Plenty of people across the state of Illinois, state of Missouri, parts of St. Louis and other places around the state, they actually celebrate the first Sunday of August as Emancipation Day. And I'm not quite sure why, but that's what people do. And I would imagine that there are probably more people over the state of Missouri who celebrate that first Sunday than that celebrate Juneteenth, because Missouri already had an Emancipation date and, Emancipation type of celebration. So it's pretty interesting. But I think in the main, it doesn't have to be either ors in any other situations. I think people will celebrate what they celebrate before Juneteenth became this national piece, and really before the pandemic. I mean, I don't know how widespread Juneteenth was. I think a lot of it, in the past 3 or 4 years just had to do with the uprising as a result of the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery. But, I think we can't have enough things to celebrate. Then we need to celebrate all of it. And people just kind of get in where they fit in.
Rasha P, is you there? Did you have any comment? Okay, let me just ask a few questions. Because first of all, brother, thank you for the body of work you just presented. It's excellent. And I see that most of the research came from the Journal of African American History, Life and History. And so I'd like to get those, references and copy the slides, because the presentation is, to me, it's very, caused you to think about the challenges. I mean, Frederick Douglass, Black people during those periods, whether it's the starting and the issuing of Juneteenth or Black History Month, I mean, they were risking their lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the European today, with this critical race theory and this Florida, Texas, they're trying to manage what we learn and what their kids learn. And so that's what they're doing. They're not just trying to wipe it out. They're trying to say when we could teach, what years, and all kind of stuff. So they're trying to tell you what you can't teach. That's interesting. Now, when it comes to Carter G. Woodson, I think he was in D.C. Did a lot of his work in there in Washington D.C. Is it correct that he didn't finish high school till 21?
20, 21, somewhere in that space, yes.
Was he a custodian or something?
Sharecropping and worked in he worked in coal mines.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think he probably started school at the age of 12. That he actually started formal school, but he wasn't able to be in school regularly because he had to work, with the family. And so it wasn't until, 2021 that he was able to attend and get done. And then, but once he was able to put that time in, he actually, relative to what the requirements were, he actually finished early. He finished a 2-year program in a year, because he was always, once he learned how to read, he was always studying on his own. Once he had those initial exposures, he was always studying on his own. And so when he had the time to do it, he went, he did it, and he knocked it out. And I think he was 37 when he finished, by the time he finished with his doctorate. So somewhere between 37 and 40, I think he was when he finished his doctoral degree.
Now, I have my thought on Chancellor Williams' concept, bridge from view from the bridge, and why you're linking it to Black history. But I want to see if it's consistent with your, how do you link that your topic with Black History Month as far as the bridge? I see it in Chancellor's discussion. I just want to see if I'm right on track.
And so, so one of the things, so even with Chancellor Williams, he links his work is linked to the education of Black folks in much the same way as, you know, the lifetime of Carter G. Woodson. And what I appreciate about that chapter, you know, View from the Bridge, it moved me the very first time I read. I think the first time that I read Destruction of Black Civilization was, I think probably like in 95 or 96. And yes, sir, got it right here. and this thought, a notion that we can be very, we get very bound in our present, and well, I mean, he said it very well, you know, like, you know, this dancing and singing, this stuff that we think represents progress. These things they clearly don't take full consideration of what our history has taught us. And it's not that we don't have people making individual achievements. We've always had that. And that's a part of what has been documented by Carter G. And that's part of what's been documented by Chancellor Williams. But the fight, it continues. Mm-hmm. And that's much to say. I mean, that would be the same thing that Dr. Bobby Wright says as well. And that we can continue to go through these things and still believe that at some point, you know, white people's better judgment is going to, you know, somehow turn to our collective advantage. That's not going to happen. And I feel comfortable in saying that's not going to happen, because that's all we've seen. All we've seen is, you know, is a series of reconstructions. And even in that article, that the first article, it said was that in 1919, Carter G. wrote The Negro Life and History in Our Schools. That's really what that is about. And he's talking about what happens with Reconstruction and what happens with the intention of white educators to not just minimize or lessen our impact at a historical level, but really to condemn us. And I think that too is what Chancellor Williams is saying, is that to the degree that we continue to believe that tomorrow white people are going to see this thing different, we put ourselves at risk.
You know, what I saw in it also, and I'm building on what you said, is because he said, you know, while we're doing all this singing, dancing, and, you know, dealing with personal
achievements, praying, marching, and all that.
Yep. All that, praying and hoping. He was saying that you still ain't getting power. You mm-hmm. still ain't getting wealth. you still ain't getting status, and you're not winning the hearts and minds of the people to move in a collective manner. I think when Chancellor Williams, in his introduction of his book, he said, when he got ready to study African history, he went to Europe because he said they had put all the stuff in their museum. When it comes to Carter B. Woodson, you know, even this year's theme for Black History Month is resistance, according to the Association of Study of African, Black and stuff. So, but the point is that you look at this struggle, you know, that Carter B. Woodson had a lot of conflict with the people in the organization, with the people around him. They said, into his study of Black history, he wanted to dominate it and, you know, and do it his way. And, you know, sometimes he had a lot of conflict with the people that he was around. You know, he was a loner for the most part in many ways. But the point is that when it comes down to African, making a Black history, it's interesting to see that the Omegas and Mary McLeod Bethune had a role in, you know,
major roles in what we see.
Yeah, see, because, you know, I didn't know that. I mean, I haven't read none of I have some of the journals of the study of Negro life and things of this nature, but I hadn't gotten into, I don't know if I have the right volumes that talked about that. And that's interesting to know. And second, that, as you say, he wanted to expand it. But in the celebration of Black History Month, Joe was right about one thing. That on the West Coast, even when they got good weather, they weren't celebrating it because the teachers, our parents, weren't into it. You see what I'm saying? As much as it was in the East Coast, because in the East Coast, everybody's packed and stacked on each other. You know, the projects go straight up and straight down. And then you don't even need a bus or a car in New York and places like that. And people are like, you know, some people live in New York, never left their block, you know. And so, you know, I went to New York. Man, they were shoveling ice out and making snow cones and it was in the summer. And they had the water hose out showering the kids. I mean, it was a deep experience. But getting back to Carter G. Woodson, when he tied in the miseducation of the Negro in one of his classic work, that was in 1930-something, if I'm not mistaken.
33?
Yeah. And it's still a classic today, because what Chancellor is saying, even though he's no longer with us, and he taught at Howard University, but he is saying, who is telling you what is Black history? here are the people in the giving out Oscars come up. The first Black woman to win two Oscars, and the first Black this to do that. I mean, that's historical notation, don't get me wrong. That's an achievement of excellence and all of that. But our struggle, history is supposed to be your struggle to shape the world in your image and your interest, and breaking down the psychological cerebral seduction that make Black people be in love with white life, white people like it.
And that's one of the things that, you know, with regard to the miseducation of the Negro, I don't, like, it's rare that you hear people talk about his entire critique. So people talk about the obvious. They talk about the title, Right. And then they talk about they'll cite a couple of quotes, you know, if there's no back door, a black man will go around and make one and all of that kind of stuff. But he's giving some very serious critiques to black businessmen who are miseducated and the implications of that. Educators who was miseducated and the implications of that. The church and church leaders who are miseducated and the implications of that. Medical professionals who are miseducated and the implications of that. And so to your point, you know, if you're not educated in a way that your point of reference is black or African, then, you know, your value disposition is such that you are going to seek to do what's in the interest of the enemy of the masses. And your existence is really, you know, just necessarily at the expense of the masses. Because at best, you have contempt and resentment for the masses. And so you're either, you know, overtly doing the bidding of the enemy, or, you know, or you're probably more, you know, probably more guilty of benign neglect because you're not serving any major role on behalf of black folks.
Now, how would you respond to this analysis? I want to get your input on this. For those who put on Black History Month program, many of them include African customs and traditions, dance, music, even brought up, you know, Nelson Mandela, you bring up Steve Biko, you bring up Patrice Lumumba, you bring up, you know, Ghana and all the challenges that we go through and struggle on the continent. And we talk about neocolonialism. That's a part of Black History Month. I put on plenty of them, and we focused on that. It depends on who's doing Black History Month, if they be inclusive of struggle issues and how to get to that point where we work toward Black empowerment and Black or African empowerment, because Cheikh Diop talked about continental unity on the continent of Africa, that they need to become one, you know, unified state. They keep their own ethnicity, keep their own unity with diversity, you know, unity with diversity, unity without uniformity, but they become, have their own national army. We covered all this in history. What happened is you have some people that just go get a bunch of Michael Jackson posters and put them up and decorate their room in school and put James Brown up or put Dina Williams them up, and they call that Black history. But when I see what Chancellor said, hey, that's a part of it, but you're leaving out the meat and potatoes. You know, that's just, you know, European giving Black people awards and recognition. You know, Jackie Robinson, the first Black to play baseball, but they never talk about the first Black people that started their own league in their own Negro league and who was the one that sponsored that and all of that. And things of this nature, and how Mary McLeod Bethune built Bethune College in Daytona, Florida. They don't talk about her like that. You know, they don't talk about her. Those are unconscious. You know, I'm talking about these yellow hair wearing wig women and teachers and Negroes League, but at the same time, we got to begin to get that in the home. And so I just want to get your feedback on that analysis.
Yes, I agree with that. And even so, even with the amount of attention, you know, that would go to entertainers, I mean, for some of our entertainers, that deep dive has to be where they've displayed that sense of agency, where they were, you know, tremendous business people. You know, there's you know, there's something to learn about, you know, the way that Michael Jackson moved in terms of business and his ability to secure the catalogs of the Beatles and, you know, all these other folks. You know, there's something to be learned about James Brown's business activities. There's something to be learned about Sam Cooke's business activities, that these people aren't simply entertainers. They are business people, and the business that, you know, and the with the profits of their business, they also benefited people, and they weren't just simply taking care of themselves. And so I think that we have to be, that this speaks to, you know, why we have a Chancellor Williams, why we have a Carter G. Woodson, why we have a Sheik Anta Diop, why we have a Dr. Ben, why we have a John Henry Clark, because these are models for us to learn how to do what Carter G. Woodson calls, you know, the scientific research, you know, of us, you know. Mm-hmm. So not just these cursory glances, and again, not, you know, our history cannot consist of our allegiance and attention to those that white folks have identified, which is a part of a view from the bridge. You know, he said that that's part of the reason why I don't get no better. So part of the reason why I don't get no better is because we find ourselves falling in line with the people that white people have identified as the leaders. And Carter G says something similar to that as well, is that those are the people who end up getting published. And so they agree on that point, is that those folks who toe the line, those are the folks who get attention. And so if we study our history, that should be more apparent to us. And we should question those types of things when we see those types of things.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So, I mean, like I said, man, your in-depthness is eye-wicked. And for you to tie Chancellor Williams' chapter of looking back from the bridge to Black History Month, analysis is excellent. I'm on top of it, man. I really appreciate the research. And again, Black history is African history. Black people are African. You know, it's Black Africans, and I mean, we cover in Black history. That's why I went to them, because like you said, they wanted to build it. He wanted to build on it. You understand? He wanted to build on it. But when I was coming up in elementary school and high school, there was not a major on it as far as consciousness. There was just what Chancellor was saying. You know, we focused on Jackie Robinson, the Globetrotters, and all of that. But we didn't focus on the Nat Turner, the Harriet Tubman, or the Denmark Beesies, or the, you know, the Martin Delaney, and Marcus Garvey, as that is concerned. You know, and even then, depthness of Booker T. Washington and his analysis and his history, and just so much to our history. That's why it was expanded. Now, on the East Coast, that may have been a narrative of why you were standing there celebrating the week and a month way back. According to the journal back then. But when we started celebrating it first, it was a week in the 60s. And then when it got to the 70s, that's why they say something about earlier than that, Black student unions and things of that nature. Said, no, let's make it a month. And at the bill on the black revolt in the 60s and changed it from Negro History Week to Black History Month.
And I mean, and again, on the West Coast, was you also have what the Black Studies movement is born out of that, yes. And so these, you know, all of these things are going on, and they're all about the same thing. They're all about you know, self determination. They're all about Kuji Shagali. And I mean, that's like the awesome thing with Carter G. Woodson is that you could look at, so like you could see the seven principles just studying Carter G. Woodson. So you know, his goal is to enlighten everybody, and he wants everybody involved. So that's unity, right? And he said, we're going to do this in our self-interest. We're going to do it the way that we do it. And yes, he certainly has some thoughts, and his thoughts were you know, kind of end up being prominent because he was the leader, but it was still about self-determination, right? And he was getting money from white folks until white folks were trying to shape his message. Mm-hmm. And after a while, he said, we're not going to do that. And he said, if the cost of your money is my content, I don't need your money. Mm-hmm. So then we get, well, he had already had the collective responsibility. That's how his fraternity gets involved. But you see the collective responsibility, and you see the cooperative economics. Mm-hmm. And they create a journal, they create a bulletin. That's Kuumba, that's creativity. And again, he's doing all of this for the people. That is the purpose. And he's able to do it. And this thing has been able to be sustained over this period of time because the people believe. And so you see the faith in the purpose and the mission and the people and the unit. I mean, so you see all of that when you look at this organization and you look at the works of Carter G. Woodson, and you know, and it's tremendous works. And so I think certainly the Miseducation of the Negro is an awesome book, but The Education of the Negro Prior to 1861 is an awesome book as well. And a lot of people aren't aware of that. And then it speaks to the strides that the Black folks took, both free and enslaved, to be educated, you know, prior to the onset of the Civil War.
Dr. Charles. Dr. Charles?
Yes, sir.
Brother Mashinda had his hand up about 5 minutes ago. So is it possible he can come on and because he wanted to chime in?
Yeah. Well, you know, no, I was just enjoying what I was hearing. I was just piggybacking off because, you know, of what he's saying. You know, appreciate the comments. Because, you know, I look at, you know, if you go back in time when, 1926 and, you know, prior and before, he was just a brother in the struggle that was, you know, of course, you know, people coming out of slavery, you know, so the man, you know, I salute the brother due to the fact that, you know, he took it upon himself to say, hey, you know, we got to do something for our people. We have to educate. We have to educate our people. We have to, you know, become productive. We got to be, you know, we got to stick together and all these other different principles and things like that. And so I salute the brother again, because there's a lot of things that was a spinoff from that. You know, it was just, I mean, he's just one person in history. And I would never think that he never talked about, say, African history or anything like that. Because, as a matter of fact, you know, according to some of the things I've read, you know, he was an important figure. He was an important figure to the movement of Afrocentrism, you know, and due to his perspective of placing people of African descent at the center of study of history and the human experience. And so when you look at the definition of Afrocentrism, is an approach to studying the world history that focuses on the history of people of recent African descent. So, okay, that says recent African descent. However, in some respects, a response to Eurocentric attitudes about African people and his historical contribution. It said it seeks to counter what it sees as mistakes and ideas perpetuated by the racist philosophical underpinnings of Western academic disciplines as they developed since the early European Renaissance, and says as justifying of other people. So in order to enable more accurate account of not only African, but all people's contribution to the world history. So he was kind of, you know, and then, well, this is, like I say, Afrocentricity deals with primarily with, like the brother said, self-determination and African agency, and is a Pan-African point of view for the study of culture, philosophy, and history. And so it goes on to say Afrocentrism is a scholarly movement that seeks to conduct research and education on global history subjects from the perspective of historical African peoples. And it says it takes a critical stance on Eurocentric assumptions and myths about world history in order to pursue methodological studies of the latter. It says some of the critics of the movement believe that it often denies or minimizes European. So it goes into that. But then I'm not going to read this whole thing. But at the end of the day, in strict terms, Afrocentrism as a distinct historiography of that reached its peak in the 1980s and 90s, and it said that it is primarily associated with Sheikh Ghanti Diop, John Henry Clark, Ivan Van Sertima, Malefi Asante, and so forth. So what I'm saying is, if he was a prominent figure as it relates to that, it covers a lot of African history. But I think that, you know, so I just reading that and you know, taking that in, I'm just saying, I would never minimize the brother in no kind of way. Maybe he's not perfect, but at the same time, just, you know, pursue this other podcast is more or less, yeah, half, you know, the History Week is, it's not History Week, it's year round. Of course, I think that they knew that, but it was just to carve out a piece of time during a week or a month, just to carve out a piece of time, or like I say, in a week or a month, just to, you know, to focus on just that, you know, to get a refresher, to you know, hey, don't lose who you are, you know, like you say, like with Kwanzaa, you know, the principles. Hey, you know, you got those 7 days of principles or what have you, you know, you pause and to think and regroup and get yourself together. Let's get together, cooperate together, and things like that. So anyway, I could go on and on, but I kind of just off the cuff wanted to slam that in there, you know.
But that was awesome, brother. There's a book called Fugitive Pedagogy, Carter G. Woodson and the Art of Black Teaching, by Jarvis R. Givens. But it actually speaks to what you're talking about, Brother Mashinda, in terms of the number of people, you know, in the Black Studies movement, the Black Arts movement, who were either, you know, that they were somehow directly influenced by Carter G. Woodson because of the bulletin and because of the journal, and because their teachers used this information and their teachers worked with the association or received information from the association, and so all of that information got pushed down to them, and so they grew up being able to learn this stuff in a period in which, you know, it was just as hostile as what we are seeing now. And that becomes the challenge. And that's a part of why I use Baba Rod. That's part of why I use A View from the Bridge, is because we are experiencing this onslaught now like this is somehow new, as opposed to this is the nature of our existence. And so we have people looking at DeSantis like this is some new thing. Like, what is wrong with DeSantis? As opposed to this is the latest iteration of the constant resistance, or the constant struggle and our resistance. You know, he is the current threat. There's nothing new about this. This is we've always had this fugitive pedagogy, and we don't look at it in that manner. And a part of the reason that we don't look at it in that manner is because all of our educators, whether they're at the primary, secondary, or post-secondary levels, they're not all teaching this for whatever their reasons may be. And so we have to do it. We have to do it at whatever level that we could do it. Community organizations such as this, you know, community outlets taking advantage of the media assets that we have to be self-determined, to exercise Kuji Shagalia and present what is ours for us.
That's beautiful, brother. I mean, you know, you think about, as Hakeem says in Chicago, you should never send your kids to be taught by people that don't love them. And we always have to ask the fundamental question, how did the people that built the pyramids end up in project? And those are things that are very, very critical. But, you know, what you presented tonight, a lot of food, we got people that go through programs. No, but when they get in front of the Black consciousness people, they dead. When they leave, they don't follow up with programs and practices. You know, I taught a lot of students. And I taught hard, brother. I mean, when I say I taught hard, you know, I had Faircon in there, I had Malcolm. You know, I'm just saturating them with consciousness and struggle, you know, and they go out and be teachers and don't get involved with the students, don't get involved with the BSU, don't get involved with a conscious activity, just teaching what the man tells them to teach. Mm-hmm. You know, starting Black Club. When I went to Community College, started the BSU at Compton College. When I went to Long Beach State, I was help build that organization. And Professor, this is a life. You have to choose it. Mm-hmm. And you know that they're going to come at you. You know, they're going to come at you. Because they came at all Black people that stand up for Black people, they're coming at you, you know. And so it's a beautiful thing what you've done. Because like I said, during the periods, like you said, DeSantis is talking about he wanted to stop teaching Black AP classes, advanced program classes. But at the same time, one time they wouldn't even let us go to school.
Mm-hmm. This is just the latest iteration.
That's what they. So they ran. Devil gonna do. Devilish. I mean, they didn't do devilish things. So, you know, I mean, it cracked me up. You know, but anyway, it's just a beautiful presentation tonight, man. And make sure you can you share those.
Absolutely.
The reason why we have to educate people to those things, especially that bridge, and you know the way you presented it. You know, it was just beautiful. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
One more question. How's the weather in Chicago? Out here is wet.
We're all right today. Today was a nice day. Today we might have got up to about 50 in a beautiful sunny day, but I think think it's probably might be sprinkling now, but for all day it was nice until after sundown.
Okay, I know, because everywhere else it's rough, brother. It's rough. And white folks in the mountains are suffering, and the Negroes.
Oh, I saw that.
With the bears and the bobcats and stuff.
Did Brother Henry get a chance to chime in?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. All right, because you guys know what I was doing. So, Brother Charles, appreciate it, man. I gotta look at it, you know, after I get it put up and all that on YouTube. So thanks everybody for coming out. We got next week, we got Brother DX of Dr. Vegan Incorporated. He's gonna do a presentation on astrotheology, the Bible codes. So that should be interesting. That should be very interesting.
I'm trying to get a confirmation for Damon Goodman, who's over the Crenshaw Subway Coalition, man. They're doing some positive things in at Lumber Park Coalition. They're buying a property for Black people, and they're doing some. I mean, it's one thing to say we need economic development. It's another thing to build a structure and go out and do it.
And do
it. You know, have a physical level. And I want to drive. He's supposed to confirm by tomorrow. Because he's going to be speaking at the Black World Institute. They're going to have a conference, I think, in April or something. Black World Institute. Get his name. Brother that's over it. He'll give me reparations. It was good. It's good.
All right. Yeah, so we're gonna take our pause, everybody. So thanks for coming out.
All right. If I'm in Chicago, brother, I'm gonna hang with you, brother. I'm gonna be
absolutely.
Be
looking for you. Right. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. We're gonna see everybody on Monday. All right.
All right.